Welcome to the Remote Leadership Podcast. I'm Deborah DiNocenzo. For more than two decades, I've helped organizations and leaders successfully go virtual. Join me to learn tips, techniques, and skills that leaders and teams in your organization can implement now to achieve effectiveness in our evolving remote workplace. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Remote Leadership Podcast. I'm very pleased to welcome my guest today, Al Schnoor. Al is president and CEO of PCI Talent Assessment Solutions. Al has spent his 30-plus year career in the talent assessment industry and is passionate, as you'll soon see, about developing long-term relationships with his clients, empowering his teams to continuously improve processes, and advising C-suite executives and boards. We've just established a partnership with PCI and with Al, so I'm very excited about the work we'll be doing together and the opportunity we'll have to discuss all of this in more depth in a future podcast. So welcome, Al, and thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, as am I. So Al, as an IO psychologist with both master's and doctorate degrees in industrial organizational psychology, I know you've worked with clients to address issues related to their cultures. What are some of the initial questions you ask and information you need to uncover to really understand the state of an organization's culture?
That's a great question. And I think in our business, it's all a matter of measurement. So what we like to do, the end game, of course, is for us to help organizations attract, hire, develop, retain better people, people that are going to fit with the culture. So the first thing I want to find out is, what is the organizational culture? And most organizations have a lot of information around culture. I think it starts with the organization's mission, and then organizations are going to have values. They're going to have a vision, critical success factors, but it all gets down to the competencies. What behaviors are going to support the organizational culture? Now, I think that a couple of things come to mind. First of all, you can do a lot of work on defining your culture, say at the board level, at the senior executive level, but what is really being translated down to the organizational level, down to the rank and file, leadership, employees, that type of thing? Rick Swiegel, who you know very well, has told me that I really like this, that culture trumps everything. So the first thing I want to understand is, what is your defined culture? And then secondly, what is the actual perceived culture? And then this gets into the measurement piece of doing interviews, looking at organizational surveys potentially, and looking at different measurements like turnover data. I mean, where are you losing people that you don't want to have leave? And there's Glassdoor is a great source for finding information about a company. You can really look through a lot of information in an organization and go right to Glassdoor, and you can see where some of the disconnects are. But I don't think there's any replacement for doing an organization-wide culture survey, communicate the information back, and then seeing where the disconnects are. And then most importantly, addressing those things.
Yeah, that goes beyond just, senior leaders saying, well, here's our culture, here's what it is, here are our culture values. And by the way, those values are posted in conference rooms everywhere. You try to get at, what do people really see, believe, and understand the really, really to be of the culture?
And I would take it down another level, that we're talking about the organizational culture in general, but if I work for your company and you are a jerk as my boss, that is my culture right there. So I think it gets into very quickly, we go from the high level all the way down to the practical level of, are our leaders doing what we want? Are they living the values, communicating the values, proactively doing that? And are our systems aligned to bringing in, developing, and rewarding? There's an old saying that you don't get what you want, you get what you pay for. So compensation systems have to align with culture. I may have gone beyond, you know, too far beyond the initial question, but
no, that's great. Yeah. So, I mean, you have ways to measure that and get real data as opposed to just kind of what people tell you.
Right.
So, you know, and I've talked about this, but, you know, building culture in remote and hybrid organizations has some unique challenges that everybody's facing right now. In my latest book, Remote Leadership, we discuss the importance of having what's called a remote first culture. And this means, as you know, that leaders must see the organization as primarily hybrid or remote or distributed, whatever language they use. I mean, more commonly now it's hybrid, and align the culture with that reality, that understanding of, you know, we're a remote organization and therefore everything needs to flow from that. So how are you seeing organizations you work with confront this culture challenge in the evolving remote hybrid environment?
A few years ago, everyone was going remote. No one was working in the office. Then we have a lot of pressure for, or in some even threats, as we talked about, if a person doesn't come back to the office, they won't be promoted, that sort of thing. But I think what's really practically happening, that this is supported across, you know, the clients I work with, is this idea of hybrid, that people want to be in the office about 2 or 3 days a week. So that automatically creates a less structured, less visible situation. So I think the key is around engagement, is proactive two-way communication, seeking feedback. So there are things like regular check-ins, video calls, virtual team meetings, promoting work-life balance, being more flexible, recognizing achievements. Again, you're going to get what you pay for. So making sure that you're communicating your culture and you're rewarding people for doing the right things. Also making sure that people have access to the necessary resources. You need just what you have in the office. Typically, that could be as simple as a printer, communications, the right software, those sorts of things. And then promoting professional development and having consistent, frequent messaging. It could be more, and I've done a lot of this with my organization, having a lot more frequent meetings and never assuming that if someone is quiet, they're in full agreement. What is more likely, according to research, is that they disagree or are not bought in. So it's confirming that people are bought in, understand, seeking feedback, making adjustments. And again, it's just engagement and communication over and over and over again.
One of the things that came out in some research that I recently did, which I'll be talking about in a upcoming podcast, is that it's so critical, all those reach outs, all the different tools that you mentioned, the ways for leaders to connect with their teams, it still won't happen unless it's planned, which is one of the differences, of course. You know, when we were in the office, we'd just bump into each other. And so that we thought that communication was happening really effectively. It might not have been, just like we thought we were being productive when we were all in the office. And I continue to, we read in the media all the time, leaders are saying we need to get everybody back into the office because we can be more collaborative and more innovative. And we're just better when we're together. And, you know, if you listen to that, they don't have any data to support that. There is no data to support that. So it gets back to, if you want to retain good talent, you've got to be more flexible in the way that you organize your business. And the desire, and you and I were just talking about recently, some data you ran across, the desire for people to have more flexibility is pretty high right now and is going to continue. You know, we got a taste of that during the pandemic, and that's not going to go away. So how do we do this and do it well? And the big insight from the research that I did is we not only have to do all these things, but we have to plan them, which means leaders have to be incredibly organized, planful, and intentional in how they do this. And my sense is, you know, we're still just figuring this out. I mean, this hybrid workplace thing is like an airplane rolling down the runway, and we're still putting the wings on in many ways. So what are some of the best practices you see clients applying relative to engaging their people, particularly in the remote hybrid environment? And again, everybody's still just figuring out remote and hybrid, but are there any particular best practices that you see that you think are important for leaders to be aware of?
Well, I think it goes back to that everyone wants flexibility. So not only flexibility with where I work, but when I work. So flexibility in terms of hours, schedules, people have children, people have activities, that sort of thing. So really listening to the employees. And we have one client that has gone completely away from any sort of structure. It's all results based. Now, I think there are a lot of risks with that, but I think the idea is that we're more concerned about what people accomplish versus how they do it and how much time it takes. They always say the work expands to the time allowed for it.
Right.
So recognizing that. But I keep going back to that the hybrid and remote is a weaker situation. Employees have more degrees of freedom, and it's easier to sort of get lost and get distracted. And very quickly, and I'm trying not to get too far deep into the selection and development piece, but it gets very quickly. It's a different type of person that is going to be highly effective working in an office of structure than somebody who's going to be working remotely in terms of their conscientiousness, their communication, their extroversion. So a lot of it, companies that are doing this well are making it explicit what the expectations are for managers in managing remote teams and not just sort of leaving it to chance. I think that's what we're looking at it. But everything else from making sure you have collaboration tools. We're a very small organization, a boutique consulting firm, but we use a tool called Asana, which keeps tasks and follow-ups. And one task I have on a regular basis, recognize accomplishments and reward successes. So something as simple as that. So I another one of myself to express gratitude every day because I'll forget.
Right. Well, and that's interesting because every leader has something that's going well within their team or that someone has done, but how easily it is just to lose that in the shuffle of things, right? To not take time to do that. So to actually, calendar an item like that, it just forces you to remember. And that's exactly the point that I was making. If we don't plan those kinds of things, it won't happen. And it does make you pause and look around and say, what are the good things? Some of the boards that I'm on, we start our meetings with everyone offers a win. And this is mostly from the departments within the organization, not board members so much, but everyone starts with a major win that happened in the last quarter since the last meeting. And, because then we're looking at all the data and looking at all the things that aren't going well and what we're going to do about that. But we've started with, some perspective around things. There are a lot of good things going on. So, and you did mention, I want to kind of save that. We'll be doing another podcast where we can get deep into some of the skills. But little preview, we'll be talking about what are some of the behaviors and skills necessary for people to work well in a remote environment, because I think your point is it's not suited to everybody. And, but if we need somebody to be working remotely, what do we need to do to develop them, to strengthen them, maybe reach out to them more often and that sort of thing. So you also mentioned, Al, that you lead a small boutique organization, which I guess we could say your PCI is a remote first organization, everything sure. I see. And so has anything changed for you? And I don't know how long you've been remote first, probably before we had the term remote first. Yeah. Anything changed for you in terms of how you connect with your team or your clients or how you deliver your services now that we're in the new era of being distant from each other, but still getting stuff done and doing it well?
That's a great question. When I was thinking about the answer to the question, I was trying to think, when did I become a remote first type of person? And I think that's 30 years ago. You and I both worked for Belt Dimensions International. And there were times when we were on the road, in the office, or at the home office, trying to catch up on laundry and everything else for being on the road all the time. So we had a lot of experience with that, but that really came to the forefront during the pandemic when everybody became remote and everything went from in person or phone to video, which is a very different different environment.
Right.
So some of the things that we did in our with my consulting firm, the weekly meetings, getting disciplined about having a weekly meeting. Now their preference, my team's preference, is to do this via phone, but it's the same sort of thing. And the other thing is to get feedback, understand what's going well. I like stop, start, keep doing those sorts mm-hmm. of things, and mm-hmm. then try to eliminate the things that aren't productive. The other thing is to try to make it fun. So somehow I made a joke that we were having going to hire some salespeople, but really low budget. So I had two rubber chickens that made noise. That was the sales team. And somehow that evolved into these chicken memes, these chicken videos. So every time we did a new project or new client, somebody would find a funny chicken picture to send it, to announce that we just got some new work. So we try to keep it fun.
Yeah.
The other thing is, as you know, a lot of financial strains and pressure during the pandemic just to keep companies profitable, keep everybody happy. So being more transparent in terms of the financial data and profitability and compensation, I think that was helpful as well. And proactive communication and then supporting the home office. Something as simple as, I need a printer. I need printer ink. When I was in the office, you bought coffee. Well, I'll buy you coffee in your office there. That type
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't make it as much of a collaborative on-site environment remotely, I think. Just try to keep all the good parts and maybe have put fewer of the distractions. So you and I joked previously that when I moved from corporate office to the regional office, I realized I had all this extra time because I wasn't going to two-hour meetings that seemed unnecessary once we're no longer in the corporate office. So try to find what are the most, going back into the work-life balance and flexibility of not doing non-value add activities with your team just to do them. So communication with the purpose toward engagement and feedback and two-way feedback.
Yeah, two things. I was just talking with a leader the other day who said, they're making us go back in a couple of days a week. And so I went in yesterday, and at the end of the day, I realized I hadn't gotten anything done. I talked to a lot of people, but I hadn't gotten anything done. Now, talking to people is an important to do, right? I mean, so we have to be conscious of that. And the whole point is we have to be conscious of so much more that we did unconsciously, just like, talking to people, bumping into people. And then, in the old days, I'd take two briefcases home, Now we can do so much more remotely. And it is true, we do tend to meet more when we're in the office together. Although, particularly early in the pandemic, and sometimes still today, I hear people are, overload from so many Zoom meetings and or Teams meetings. So screen fatigue is an issue. But I always remind them, we just had meeting fatigue when we were in the office. So your chicken story reminded me of just a little story I want to tell from the Remote Leadership book. During the pandemic, if you remember early on, leaders were very concerned because people went home suddenly. They didn't necessarily have all the resources that you just mentioned, Al, making sure they had all the right tools, because they just all of a sudden went home on a Friday afternoon and we thought they were only going home for 3 weeks, right? And so, but then as time went on, we found that people were going to be staying home longer under a lot of pressure, particularly organizations that were designated as essential businesses that had to stay open by government mandate. They still had to be managing people who were there, getting product out the door. And so one of the leaders that I interviewed for that book, and I use his name in the book, not his full name, his name was Winston. Winston got the bright idea, which was a bright idea, to do some fun things, because you mentioned about fun. So Winston said to his team, okay, we're going to have a meal together. We're going to cook dinner together. Here's what we're going to make. It was a chicken dish. So he gave everybody the recipe, told them, go buy everything. And then on Zoom, they were together going to cook their dinner, each in their own kitchens, and then, break bread together virtually. So one of the funniest things ever that came out of that, they had a great experience. But one of the team members showed up with his pet chicken and introduced the rest of the team to his pet chicken. Nobody knew he had a pet chicken. I was quick to clarify that that chicken did not serve as the chicken for that team member's meal, which it did not. And so, you know, when we do things like that, we do creative and fun things, which my sense is we're doing less of that now because we're back into the, you know, we got to get the work done, which is fine. We had to get the work done then as well. I always remind leaders, let's not lose sight of the need for people to do those kinds of things because you never know what's going to come out. Who knew this guy had a pet chicken, right? Which I resonated with because I had pet chickens when I was growing up. And the first one was named Twerp. And so I've always thought fondly of Twerp the chicken. So Al, it sounds like much of your work in assessing and identifying talent requires a clear understanding of the integration with the organization's culture, which I think that we're in kind of a cultural evolution as we're evolving the workplace. Do you think that is true?
Yeah, I think, but it's getting, I heard it said, you get back to principles rather than specifics around culture. And a lot of it was doing the right thing when no one's watching, that sort of thing. And it's understanding that culture and then bringing people in that are going to fit with that culture. Because, you know, for example, I worked with a large tire manufacturer and they said they wanted change agents. That was one of their values. We are going to have change. So we helped them assess leaders for over a year, almost 2 years, that had the ability to come in and affect change. They were all hired and gone within a year because the organizational culture was not open to change. So
they thought they wanted change. They thought they wanted change, people that could affect change, but they really didn't.
Right. Before, you know, we called it the cultural immune system. They eliminated people very quickly. So it's being really clear on what your culture, what you want your culture to be, what it actually is. You may have people in your organization that are not aligned already with your culture, but the culture, very basic things around how do you treat people, the way work assignments are doled out, how opportunities for advancement are provided, whether employees prefer to collaborate or work alone, whether casual dress is okay, obviously that's not a remote issue, what's talked about or taboo, whether there's pressure to work when you're sick, whether birthdays are celebrated, how different departments and teams get along, whether you can have FaceTime with an executive, and so on.
Yeah, yeah. You know, actually, I think dress still is an issue because people got really down-home casual during COVID, right? And, presence, the appropriate level of presence and how you look on screen, just because you're at home doesn't mean that you should, look like you just rolled out of bed and, in a crumpled t-shirt, particularly if you're meeting with a client. I remember during COVID at one point, right, maybe 3 weeks in, I was talking with a guy and he was in sales actually. And so it was interesting because it was still in the 3 week time frame, and his frame of reference at that time was, well, I'm keeping in touch with my clients. I'm reaching out to them, but I haven't really talked to any like new, I'm not talking to my prospects because as soon as this lockdown stuff is over, I need to get back on the road. Well, so then I talked to him a couple months later and I said, so how's that going for you? Well, he had to learn how to, if he was going to close sales, he had to do it remotely, but he was he had this like beard that had he hadn't shaved in a while and it's t-shirt. And I said, oh my gosh, Evan, are you like talking? Do you look like that when you're talking to clients and prospects? And a lot of people forgot about how they looked, and they looked, on screen ways that they wouldn't look if they were in the office. Yeah. And that conveys a certain a sense of not caring and not caring about yourself, not caring about your work. And I think also you mentioned that the issue around, should you work when you're sick? Well, obviously we, tried to encourage people not to be coming into the office when they were sick, even before COVID, when they had the flu, we don't need somebody infecting us. At the same time, people are entitled to take time off when they're sick and they're not being so productive. I think we run into more situations when people work from home and their kids are home because their kids are sick. And, you know, managing that is still a challenge. And so in wrapping up, I'm just curious about, Al, can you give our listeners a quick overview? You've kind of touched on some of the services that you provide, but a quick overview of the services that PCI offers and why a clear connection between your services, which you're happy to deliver, and understanding organizational culture first is so essential.
Yeah, I think, and if you don't mind, I'd just like to give some examples of types of cultures. We spoke in generalities. I think that may lead it to an answer to your question.
Perfect.
So examples could be caring, collaborative, and supportive, purposeful, idealistic, and altruistic, learning, inventive, and innovative, and some companies should start coming to mind as we list these things, enjoyable, fun, and stimulating, results-oriented, driven by achievement and winning, authoritative, competitive, and controlling, safe, predictable, and risk-averse, orderly, methodical, and cooperative. So as you see all these different types of culture, you can think about the different type of person that's going to fit or not fit in that culture. You can imagine somebody, say, going from working for Goodyear to working for Google. Very different. I mean, you've got the ping pong tables and the casual dress versus suit and tie structure and all that sort of thing. So what we say is we can measure whatever it is you're looking for, but we have to know what you're looking for and be very honest about that. So PCI is a psychologist-led boutique consulting firm founded in 1957, and we focus on psychological assessment for hiring, development, and succession planning. We're trusted business advisors. We're not test resellers. So we help predict performance, promotion, promotability, and help you plan for success. As an add-on, we can also do individual and team level development and coaching to make sure that those potential liabilities do not become actual ones if you hire somebody. So we start with a very clear definition of what you're looking for, and that goes mission to vision to values, critical success factors. Once we get to the competency level, then we map our process on, which is about a 2.5 hour test battery and a psychologist interview. Onto your competencies, provide a rating of your competencies, overall rating of fit. We also rate organizational values. It's so somebody could be strong on the competencies, which are the what's, but weak on the how's. And that's the type of person that it's not that they're a bad employee or bad manager. They're a bad fit for your organization because how they view the world, motivations, that sort of thing. So in a nutshell, we help organizations make data-based decisions, been doing it for a long time, and you know, would love to talk to anyone who has concerns about how their current leaders are fitting into, or prospective leaders are going to fit into a remote or hybrid work environment.
Excellent. And so if someone wants to learn more or connect with you, what's the easiest way for them to do that, Al?
Well, if you just want to learn more, our website, pciassess.com, has not only a description of what we do, some of our validation research where we've demonstrated results, but also a lot of resources. Connect with me on LinkedIn or a PCI company page where you can easily find from my LinkedIn profile. But what I like to engage with clients is to offer to look at your existing hiring processes. Do you use interviews? Do you use testing? Do you use reference checks, simulations, exercises, that sort of thing? What results are you having? What's your turnover? Review that data and then spend at least an hour reviewing what you've done, what you're doing, making some recommendations and doing all that with no cost or obligation, just so you can go back and say, well, maybe this is out of order or I'm not getting the result I want here, that type of thing. But again, it all goes back to trusted advisor. We really, as you started out the discussion, we focus on long-term relationships with clients and being that trusted advisor that's outside of the process and is highly objective, unlike a recruiter, unlike the hiring manager who really, really needs somebody. And obviously the candidate has trying to put their best foot forward and may have been trained how to get, how to interview and get that job.
Right. So, right. Okay. So your solutions are tailored, obviously, based on what a client has been doing. improve that and add other resources, other tools, other instruments, if you will, to have that better connection between their culture, what they want, and what they're going to get, and how that talent will work well for them.
Exactly.
So, okay, we are going to meet again. We'll be doing another podcast to talk more about the partnership that we're doing and some of the nitty-gritty around making sure that organizations hire and develop and promote the right leaders in this new evolving work environment. So until we meet again, Al, thanks for your time today and the great information that you shared. Additional information is in the show notes, but you can reach out to Al at pciassess.com, and we'll look forward to connecting again. So thank you, Al. Thanks.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Remote Leadership Podcast. To learn more about how I can help you and your team, your colleagues, and your organization master the skills, systems, and culture for the remote hybrid work environment, see the show notes for ways to reach me, or contact me at remoteleadershippodcast.com. Thanks for listening and for always learning.